Well, good evening. Welcome to Well Armed Radio. Still can't get that mix right on that that intro music. Top Gun theme. A lot of people recognize it. Great movie. I've been told before that, and by people older than myself, that that movie was cheesy. I didn't think it was cheesy. I thought it was the greatest movie of all time. Sunday, Memorial Day weekend. I'll get that mix right one of these times. I'm going to blame my producer for that one, my producer Hugh. Nick Clark, Chairman and President of Wisconsin Carry, host of Well Armed Radio. Thanks for joining me tonight. Wanted to take a couple minutes here, a brief introduction. I think this is our fourth or fifth weekend doing the broadcast. Well Armed Radio is something that I considered doing for a long time. Well, radio program in general is something I considered doing for a long time. And now that I have my role with Wisconsin Carry, I've been exposed to a good deal of information that otherwise people might not come across. And I thought there was a gap, an opportunity to put together a radio program that focused a good deal on Wisconsin issues. I think there's obviously other radio programs, national programs that deal with gun rights issues, and some local regional programs. A couple of friends of mine I know do a show in, I want to say they're out of Indiana. But this again, my name is Nick Clark. I am the host of Well Armed Radio, and we have a good show tonight. When I started this broadcast endeavor, you know, I told you that as crude as it may sound, that broadcasting is like sex and no one's good at it the first time around. But if you stick with me, it'll get better. And hopefully that's the case. Hopefully we're getting better here. So, well, I'm excited for tonight. Uncovered some information that I am eager to share with you about the Carroll College gun scare from April 16th last month. So we'll get to that. Have some other topics as well. We'll see what we get through today. I usually go about an hour and a half, about 90 minutes. We may or may not fit it all into there. I have quite a few topics for tonight. Hoping for some good participation. Hopefully we'll get a number of people calling in and expressing their opinions. Not that gun owners are the opinionated type. I say that in jest. So definitely feel free to call in, share your opinion. The call-in number is 646-716-8739. 646-716-8739 is the call-in number. There's also a chat on from the page. You can see the chat bar from the page that you use to listen to the broadcast. There's a chat option there. So I monitor that chat. I see some people here on the chat already, a good number of folks. So I monitor that chat. I keep an eye on there. I also keep an eye on the I try to keep an eye on the Well-Armed Radio Facebook page. I did post some links to the Facebook page before tonight's broadcast, some links that we'll be talking about during the show, specifically about the Waukesha County gun scare. So with that, I got to talk about boating a little bit. Went boating yesterday. I know that some of the listeners love it when I talk about boats, especially my friend Kurt. Kurt loves it when I talk about boats, so I promised him I would talk about boats today. Good day out in Lake Michigan yesterday. Not too warm, but not too bad. East winds. Waters were relatively calm. I think it was about 56 degrees water temperature. Air temperature about the same. First weekend, and I would say, I want to say it's the first weekend all season that I haven't been stopped by the Coast Guard for an unconstitutional stop. I was, I think it's getting to the part of the season where there's more boats out, so they have more to do, and as a result, I don't get the friendly treatment every week. No greetings from the Coast Guard this weekend. But I'm still hoping that someone's going to take me up on my offer boating is, gun owners, people who are interested in right to carry, definitely freedom-minded folks. And I got to tell you, I mean, if you haven't done it, you know, take my word, there's nothing more freedom-minded and that gives you that feeling of freedom than being out in the open water, being out in a boat. You know, it's just the fact, I mean, it's like this massive moat surrounding your little fortress, your little castle there, or your own boat on the water, and as long as you've got a radio and a cooler and a couple friends, and it's a good time. And I spend a lot of time in the boat. We go down to Chicago, which is as close as I will get to Chicago voluntarily, is on the boat. I'm just monitoring the Facebook feed here, and I've heard a couple people mention that they can't hear, so hopefully the broadcast is... hopefully the broadcast is coming through okay. So monitoring the chat here, if you can hear the broadcast. I know it looks like one of our listeners is coming through good. So, yeah, we can see it now. Good. As I was saying, Chicago, boating, it's about as close as I want to get to that city where there's such a draconian level of disrespect for people's rights, specifically right to carry. But from the lake, it's not as bad. There's an area called the Playpen. It's just north of Navy Pier, just in the shadow of, you're kind of north of Lake Point Tower in the shadow of the Hancock Building. Little area protected by a breakwall there. They call it the Playpen. That's a good place to park your boat and drop your anchor and party. But yeah, I'm still waiting for someone to take me up on my offer and head on over to Skipper Bud's. I do a lot of business with Skipper Bud's. Great guys over there. They've got locations all across the state. Downtown Milwaukee, Pewaukee, Oshkosh, Racine, Sturgeon Bay, Madison, all over the state. But yeah, if you're interested, head over to Skipper Bud's. Tell them Nick from Well-Armed Radio sent you and tell them you want the Well-Armed Radio discount. Tell them I'll make you a great deal. And join me out on the lake. It's a great time for freedom-minded folks. Second topic I wanted to go into, besides Kurt's favorite topic of boating, is to talk about open carry versus concealed carry. We have a debate in Wisconsin that's been going on for quite some time, and I thought it was not ironic. Ironic's the bad word. People misuse ironic often. Often when people use the word ironic, they really mean coincidence. But I thought it was coincidental that the first broadcast that I had, someone wanted to pipe in on open carry. So I actually have that clip for you. I'm going to play it here today. But I'll start with that clip, and we'll jump into the topic, and hopefully we'll get some good calls on this one as we talk about open carry versus concealed carry. So to set up this clip, this was from the first show. It was actually the test broadcast that I did. The first show, gentleman called in. I take it back, second show. I believe he talked to Sheriff David Clark, was my first guest on the first official show, and we had a caller that called in right after that. So I took this clip from that caller's audio, and I'll play it for you now.
I do believe that even though it's been illegal since I've been a kid, and I'm 72 years old, or thereabouts, I do believe that people that open carry in a public place, even though it's legal, are cowboys, and I don't think that sets the best precedent for what your cause is. End of my comments. Carry on, and it's a good show you got going.
So there you have it. That was, I believe Bob was his name, and I'm really glad he called in, because it's an interesting, and I'm not putting his comments out on the airwaves here in jest. I think it's a good discussion to have, because I'll be quite frank. I mean, I hear this often. In fact, I heard it during the concealed carry debate when we were still working on getting a concealed carry law passed here in Wisconsin. There was a lot of talk from some from legislators and some from other gun rights groups in the state that we open carry folks were going to ruin it for everybody. There was talk that if we kept pushing our luck with open carry, that open carry was going to get outlawed and concealed carry was going to be the only thing that we'd be able to do. So obviously we rejected that. Wisconsin Carry was founded on one of the premises of our belief system was that couple things. First, we had a lot of talk about no compromise, and we didn't take that approach that Wisconsin Carry was no compromise. We really took the approach that we were going to move forward. We didn't lose our rights all in one fell swoop, and we probably wouldn't get them back in all one fell swoop, but we were going to take as much gains as we could in restoring our freedoms and move forward from there. The second thing was that we didn't advocate for open carry or concealed carry. We really advocated for people to carry in the manner of their choosing, and that's the position that we continue to hold today. I'm well aware that a good number of our members may not feel the same way. We have members, I know, that think that open carry is a bad idea. You've heard from Bob, who called into the first show, and again, I don't put that clip up there to ostracize his comments at all. I'm well aware that's a sentiment out there, and not just from Bob, but I mean, again, leaders of other gun rights groups here in Wisconsin have made that comment to me that you open carry folks were going to ruin it for everybody, and I don't think we did. I think we've staked out a great deal of gains because of what we did with open carry. In fact, we got codified into Act 35 that open carry was not disorderly conduct. That was a statement that Attorney General Van Hollen made in April of 2009, which kind of got the open carry movement really going here underway in Wisconsin. That's not the first time people open carry. People have been open carrying for a long time before that, but that was when the tidal wave of open carry began. So, you know, feel free to call in 646-716-8739. I'd like to hear from both sides. I'd like to hear from people who, if you do open carry, if you don't open carry, if you think open carry folks are cowboys, I'd like to hear your opinion too. You know, I've heard a lot of the discussion on both sides, so definitely feel free to call in and talk about this. When we talk about open carry, you know, it's interesting, back I'm before concealed carry came into law, members of ours did a lot of work, myself and a lot of our members did a lot of work contacting legislators, specifically Senator Galloway, who authored the legislation and really did a lot of education as far as open carry and concealed carry, constitutional carry. You know, we almost got constitutional carry passed here, which would have been quite an accomplishment to go from no I shouldn't say no right to carry, because you know, we had open carry, but to go from no right to concealed carry at all, not even a shall issue, to constitutional carry would have been a great step. So but I heard from I'm not going to name names, but we had a gun summit where we had the leaders of several different right to carry organizations call in. Right to carry organizations, we met up in, I want to say Fond du Lac, and talked about it, and they really thought poorly of open carry. We've got a caller on the line. They disappeared. We had a caller on the line. I was going to jump over there and hear an opinion, someone from the 715 area code, which is, I believe that's mid-state, probably Stevens Point, Wausau area. But yeah, we had a summit before Act 35 where, I'm going to protect the not so innocent here by withholding names, but some leaders from some other gun groups in Wisconsin, along with a lobbyist, a very powerful lobbyist who worked for one of the other gun groups here in Wisconsin. We met in Fond du Lac, and the opinions that the other gentleman expressed about open carry were pretty disappointing. It was clear to me that even though we're all on the right side of the issue as far as right to carry, you know, we didn't have uniformity when it came to open carry, and that was disappointing. So we've got some people active here in the chat. Definitely looking forward to having some people call in so we can take some calls on this, get a debate going. And who knows, maybe we won't, you know, obviously Bob called in a few weeks ago and expressed his opinion about open carry. And I hope I'm not scaring folks who might be against open carry away from calling in. There's points to be made, I believe, on both sides of the issue. Obviously, I've already stated how Wisconsin Carry feels about it. But if you're an open carrier out there and you feel strongly that you're not a cowboy and that there's benefits, reasons to open carry, I'm more than welcome to give me a call, 646-716-8739, and express your opinion. We don't get any calls on the subject. We'll definitely jump into the next one. But, as we talk about open carry, here we go. I think I got the same caller on again. So we'll jump over here, take our first caller. And good evening. You're on Well Armed Radio. Turn here. I can hear your computer. Turn your computer down. Just listen through your phone. You should be able to hear. There's a lag between our broadcast and what you'll hear. So listen to the phone and talk there. And who do we have on the line?
This is Bruce up in central Wisconsin.
Hey, Bruce. Thanks for calling in.
I would like to take and say that I open carry on a regular basis, and I feel there is no reason for a concealed carry permit. It's just non-existent. It's no reason for it.
So did you do you have your concealed carry permit, or you just open carry?
I have a permit, but I do open carry.
Yeah, I think for me, because most of the time, I shouldn't say that. I open carried all the time from 2009, from April 2009 until I got my concealed carry permit. I think the only legitimate reason that I really felt compelled to get my concealed carry permit was because of the school zone issue. That was the only one for me that I was concerned about. Because if it wasn't for that, I'll be honest, I probably, it's hard to say. I mean, there's times I still like to, if the weather's bad, throw my jacket over the coat, or excuse me, throw my jacket over my sidearm. But I prefer to open carry most of the time. From 2009, most of the holsters I had were open carry holsters. So then that just kind of made it more convenient instead of purchasing new equipment. But I think my other question for you, Bruce, is the part of the state that you live in. I mean, do you come across those school zones, or are you more in a rural area? Or
I am in a rural area. But yes, I do come across school zones, and I feel that the school zones, it should be, an open carry, what happened out in Connecticut, if there was someone that was around with a firearm, I feel that would not have happened.
I agree. And that's one of the things that I'm going to let you go here, Bruce. Thanks for calling in. We're going to get to some more calls, but thanks for calling in and be well armed. One of the things, obviously open carry and people who open carry, one of the attributes that they express is that, one of the attributes that they express is that it's a deterrent. And indeed it is. There's also, I've talked to anti-gun folks, and ironically many of them, given the choice, would say, well, you know what, some of them prefer that we wouldn't be able to carry at all, but if you're going to carry, they prefer that you open carry, because then they'd at least know. So that's an interesting, and I've heard police officers say that as well. There was some police are not monolithic on this. There's some officers that are against carry altogether. We got another call in line here. We'll jump in for a second here, a 414 area code, so Milwaukee area, but some officers were against it altogether, and some had said, but if we're going to have the habit, I'd rather have open carry so that we know who's carrying. Good evening. Welcome to Well Armed Radio. Who's this?
Hey, Nick. This is Greg Plotz, the organizer of the Greenfield Open Carry Picnic back in the day.
Yeah, Greg, how are you? Are you still, now obviously you're calling from 414, but I know you, do you still live in Greenfield? I know you were going to school in North Dakota. Are you back here? Or?
Parents are still living in that same house we had the picnic in, but I'm actually up in North Dakota now, living here permanently, working up here as well.
Excellent. Well, thanks for tuning in from North Dakota. Yeah, that was a great cookout. I mean, that was pre-Act 35. A lot of media came that day, and it was interesting. And I'm trying to recall when we had that open carry picnic. There's school zones near your house, I recall, and didn't there was a letter I think that you got from Greenfield, because that was part of our lawsuit against the school zones that we had filed, which unfortunately, well, I shouldn't say unfortunately, once Act 35 passed, we couldn't pursue that lawsuit anymore because there was then a way to carry within school zones. Before that, there was no way to carry within school zones. But talk about that for a minute, if you recall, or I'm sure you recall, that a letter that I believe you got, I don't want to say threatening, but basically expressing that, if you went within those school zones, you'd be subject to possible charges.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so what happened was back in the day, there was the whole issue with carrying within 1,000 feet of a school grounds, and at the time, it was 1,000 feet was kind of a very subjective thing. It was it 1,000 feet from the center of a property, the edge of a property? We really didn't know, and that kind of led to back on the open carry forums, we would take actual Google Maps and we would mark out 1,000 feet, radius in a circle from any kind of point on a specific school land, and my property back home was very close to the Greenfield Middle School, and when you would actually calculate the 1,000 feet from kind of the corner of where the property line would be, it would actually encompass the street and the entryway to the property. And so part of the issue that we had was people would have to unload their firearms uncase their firearms from their vehicle and start carrying on the actual private property of my property, as opposed to parking on the street and walking to the property, because then they may be in violation of the 1,000 feet code. And so, yeah, as you said, Greenfield Police came over, gave us a kind of a document that said, they're aware of the picnic, they're aware that it really doesn't violate any local laws or any state laws, but they're just going to be just notifying us of the pertinent laws to gun possession and carry and everything in Wisconsin at the time. So one thing we did, was just we kind of noticed a police presence every now and then kind of driving past, and one of the things that one of the media mentioned, too, was that I kind of went to all the neighbors, delivered a hand letter saying, what this was actually going on with and what's going to be happening. And kind of as I posted in the chat, too, I mean, we had a negative reaction from one of my neighbors, but all the other ones were either indifferent or I recall a few that were actually positive as well.
And I remember that letter was important because we used that for our lawsuit, because we had to be able to show standing. We had to be able to demonstrate that our carry activities, our carry behaviors are being encumbered by these school zones. So that letter became very important. So open carry and concealed carry, I mean, obviously I'm not as familiar with North Dakota laws, but do you, is North Dakota an open carry state? Do you open carry now, concealed carry combination?
Yeah, but it's more of a combination. Yeah, it's going from Wisconsin to North Dakota was definitely a night and day experience, because up here there's quite a bit of open carry, especially in a lot of the rural areas. One of the things I like to say is the big difference between the two states. I mean, in Milwaukee, you drive in one direction, you hit suburb after suburb, but here in North Dakota, I live in Fargo right now, actually, too, and you drive so far in one direction, instantly you're in the country, you're in farmland, you're in non-paved roads, and so it's a huge different experience. And even then, too, just very small towns dot the landscape and dot the just areas between all these individual towns, and open carry is something that's seen quite a bit. And even in the cities, too, like I open carry every now and then, typically concealed carry mostly, but it's definitely something that you would see, not necessarily on a daily basis, but definitely once in a while, especially during the summertime.
Yeah, excellent. Well, Greg, it's great to talk to you. I know that since you've been up there in North Dakota, we keep in touch on the Wisconsin Carry Facebook page, and good to hear from you. We're going to jump to some more calls here, but thanks for calling in.
Yep, thanks for having me.
Yeah, be well armed. We've got another call here, 715 area code, center part of the state. We'll jump over here. Good evening. Welcome to Well Armed Radio. Who's this?
Hello?
Good Good evening. Welcome to Well-Armed Radio. Who's this?
This is Rob Lee. Can you hear me?
Yes, Rob. How are you?
Good. I was on one of your first shows, as a matter of fact. I was having
Excellent.
A little trouble at first. I was on your having just a little bit of trouble tonight when I was kind of hearing all sorts of double talk, and then I just dialed the number and listened only on the telephone, and everything came out good.
Yeah, perfect. So open carry, concealed carry, what's your preference?
Oh, I definitely love to concealed carry, and I have no objections to open carry. I just prefer to concealed carry. I don't want the element of surprise to leave me. And I feel if I ever do get in the situation, that's my edge.
Yep. Yeah, I hear that expressed, people, that sometimes I know even, you know, I've read some articles where there's a lot of people who, you know, these tactical vests that people have, they've also, you know, people who are in the carry movement have mentioned that those tactical vests are like the shoot me first vests, because they let a potential thug, a potential assailant, you know that that you're the one that's armed. So that's why some people prefer to be even more incognito than that. You know, your gun might be concealed, but if you're wearing those tactical type vests that a lot of people who conceal carry wear, that you're losing that element of surprise. So I think that's an interesting point. I think there's some people that counter that element of surprise, and some like the deterrent element faster. You know, we may get some calls from some people who might wish to debate that topic, the element of surprise. I also think an interesting angle is that, you know, people here in Wisconsin, when open carry was the only way that we could carry, states where they're prohibited from open carrying, those people are trying to get open carry there as well. We've got another call on the line here, so I'm going to switch over. Rob, thanks for calling in and expressing your opinion, and maybe we'll get some counters to the element of surprise here. But thanks for being on Well-Armed Radio.
You're welcome.
We'll talk to you soon. Good evening. You're on Well-Armed Radio. Who's this?
Hey, Nick. This is Kurt. Stab you about the boats.
Kurt, how are you?
I am doing well this evening. How are you, sir?
I'm excellent. Open carry, concealed carry. I'm going to reason to guess you have something to say.
I always have something to say. You know that. As you're probably aware, I'm very much a proponent of the open carry. I mean, I found out many times that open carrying has given me a chance to be the ambassador to the public. People will ask questions, and I can answer them politely and openly and educate them where they wouldn't necessarily know that they could get that information. And I know others have reported to themselves in the same situation where they're out and about and someone sees it and starts asking the questions. And there's also the point where we're going out and, you know, we're showing that we're exercising the right people and realizing it, and realizing we're not a threat.
We're
going to realize that we're out there and that's actually being exercised.
And I think that's a very important thing. And actually, that's why I often open carry whenever I can. I often carry both. I often conceal and open carry, just because my backup is usually concealed and then I open carry on the hip. But I really much embrace the concept that we are really ambassadors, and we are, I don't think it's an overstatement to say we're missionaries for the right to carry movement, because there's a lot of people who aren't aware that carry is legal. Some people aren't aware that open carry is legal, but when they see a person with a gun, obviously, just like you, I often get questions for it, and I want people to come up to me and say, hey, I mean, before Act 35, people would come up to me and say, are you a cop? And, you know, can you do that? And I said, yeah, indeed, you can open carry. It's legal, and have a great conversation and get some people interested in their right to carry, in exercising their right to carry. But even now, I continue to do it, and you'll still have people come up and ask questions. And I, you know, express to them that certainly you can conceal carry as well, and mention Wisconsin carries free classes. But the other side of it, even as there is that advocacy, that missionary point that is an important piece to me. But outside of that, there's also just the normalization. And I'll be honest, I want, and there's people who hate this concept and reject this concept. there's a lot of things in society that different groups want to normalize. And for me and for Right to Carry folks, I think normalizing people to seeing guns in the hands of a law-abiding citizen is a good thing. And that even goes for, I'll be honest, that even goes for long rifles. I mean, that can be a controversial subject. A lot of times people open carrying assault rifles, but I want people to see that a good law-abiding citizen owns assault rifles. And if they go walking with those, I don't have a problem with it. And I think that normalization, people might be shocked and they might turn up their nose, and even the antis might turn up their nose, but even the antis are becoming normalized to it. And I think that's a good thing.
And once it's normalized, the fear goes away. Once the fear goes away, there's less accidents and incidents that can happen from it.
Absolutely. Well, Kurt, it's great to talk to you. I will see you on the lake next Saturday.
You're buying me a boat? Awesome.
I for your birthday.
I have one other question, though, regarding anyone who says that they like the element of surprise with concealed carry. Where do you have the element of surprise in your defensive situation? Element of surprise is generally an offensive statement.
That's a great point.
If you're going to have surprise, it's going to be so that you take the advantage in the situation. If somebody already has a weapon out and pointed at you, going for your weapon has no element of surprise. I think that's when you're most likely going to be the shot first person. And while you're currently sitting, while those of us who are sitting open carry, your average criminal is not going to go after a situation where there is someone else there armed. If they're willing to take up risk, they're usually looking at a high-risk situation. You're pretty much looking at severe grand theft situations, or something that you're, even all the crime in Chicago, you're not seeing those types of crimes where you're going to see someone who's going to knowingly take on that risk and be comfortable with it.
Absolutely.
So the element of surprise and the shoot first arguments, I think, don't hold water. And there actually have been some reports of people were caught staking out a location waiting for someone who was open carrying to leave.
Interesting. Yeah, I agree with everything you said.
So,
well, Kurt, thanks for calling in.
All right. Have a good night.
Be well armed. Good evening. You're on Well Armed Radio. Who's this?
Sherry.
Hey, Sherry. How are you?
Good, thank you.
Where are you calling from tonight?
The Plymouth and West Bend area.
Excellent. Sherry, you have the distinction of being the first female to call into Well Armed Radio, so thank you.
You're welcome.
So, Sherry, my first question is going to be, what are you packing tonight?
I have a 22 Magnum.
Excellent. How have you been carrying for a long time? Just concealed carry, open carry?
I conceal carry. I would like to open carry, but I'm afraid in this area I'd get too much hassle.
Yeah, that's an interesting comment, because that's exactly what we heard during the open, when it was open carry only here in Wisconsin. We had a lot of people who, and it's kind of funny, I've noticed a very common thread. Everybody thinks that the police and the people in their local area are more strict or more overreactive than people in other areas. I've heard people say that, well, yeah, that's the kind of thing you can do in Waukesha, but you couldn't do that out in Delavan or something like that. And I remember when I lived in Delavan, and people thought that the Delavan cops were hassling, and cops in other places were cooler, but the cops where you live were more uppity. So I'd encourage you to try it. The first time, and it's an interesting first now, because it's codified as legal, you know, you're definitely protected from that standpoint in terms, I mean, you won't be arrested. Well, I can't say you won't be arrested, because it only takes one officer, ignorant police officer, who doesn't know the law. But I mean, before Act 35, I think there was a higher probability that people might have police contact. But I mean, I've open carried all across the state. You know what we used to do? We used to actually have people who would surrogate carriers who would come and you could follow them while they would carry through your local businesses, so that you could see, just watch people's reaction and have that confidence that people wouldn't overreact. So yeah, I encourage you to give it a shot. It's the first time I open carried, which was pre-Act 35 in April 2009. I was very nervous. I mean, I had to grab a shopping cart, and I was only going in for a couple items just so my hands had something to do. And I've had people that open carried for the first time, again, pre-Act 35, who said, when do you stop feeling like you're doing something wrong? So.
Well, I went to the before we were allowed to conceal carry, you guys went to Starbucks in West Bend, and I went
yep.
to that. And that's what really grabbed my attention. I had been on vacation in Alaska, and, you know, you saw more people that open carried than that didn't.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I personally feel like the previous caller, if more people open carried, I think there'd be a lot less crime. Just like the states I've been in that have that people don't have such a shock factor. Those are the states that have less crime.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Sherry, I'm grateful that you called in. It's great to have the first. Well, first, it's great to know we have female listeners out there. But thanks for calling in, and be well armed. And I want to hear from you in a couple of weeks when you've had your first open carry experience and hear how it went for you.
Okay.
Thanks for calling
in.
Thank
you very much.
Yeah, have a good night.
Bye.
Take a few more calls on this one. 715 area code here on the line. Thanks for holding. You're on Well Armed Radio. Who's this?
Hello. Are you talking to me?
I am. Welcome.
Hey, fantastic. I just had one more thing that I wanted to say, then I'll back out. I was the one that stated the concealed carry for the element of, basically for the element of surprise, and I do believe that is right. It is so much easier to not have anybody suspect that I am carrying in a situation that is either active or look like it may be going to become active. And if I look like I'm not carrying at all, the threat towards me is low. You can just feel it by the tenseness in the air.
Yeah, I mean, there's so definitely I do see your point. I mean, there's no question that in some situations, a person who's carrying could be a target. I think it's rare, but we have one here in Milwaukee, actually, where there was a guy who was open carrying, and literally, you know, there's situational awareness comes into play here, but we had a gentleman who was open carrying on the north side before Act 35, before concealed carry was legal, and someone came up to him, and his attention was piqued, you know, but this guy asked him for a cigarette. His guard then was down, and he starts to reach for a cigarette to give the guy a cigarette, and the guy puts a gun to his head and steals his open carried gun. So obviously that does, you know, prove your point, that at least in one situation, and that's very rare. I haven't heard of that happening before, but there was a situation where it happened. So your point has validity.
And there is a definite guideline on the area where you live. I live in central Wisconsin. I'm from small town. Now, I'll tell you right up front, everybody knows that. I'm sure that the things are more relaxed around here, open carry or closed carry, it's not such tight control, and we don't have such higher crime, and we don't have the police ready just to pounce all over us. So I think that way in itself, geography is part of the scenario that has to be dealt with.
Yeah. Well, thanks for calling in. I appreciate your counterpoints.
You're welcome.
Have a good night. Bye. Be well armed. So we didn't get any, I don't think we really got anybody that was totally anti-open carry, and I was hoping that we would, but you know, we've done, I think we're probably about 30 minutes into that segment. So going to move on here. This is the next segment I wanted to run is the highlight of my night. I wanted to, with the research that we've done, and this is a new topic. So we'll change it up here and move on to the next topic. We'll take a short break. I'll be back with you, and we'll talk about the Waukesha Carroll College incident.
I'm Sheriff David Clark, and I want to talk to you about something personal, your safety. It's no longer a spectator sport. I need you in the game. But are you ready? With officers laid off and furloughed, simply calling 911 and waiting is no longer your best option. You can beg for mercy from a violent criminal, hide under the bed, or you can fight back. But are you prepared? Consider taking a certified safety course in handling a firearm so you can defend yourself until we get there. You have a duty to protect yourself and your family. We're partners now. Can I count on you?
This safety message brought to you by the Milwaukee County Sheriff's Office.
So, welcome back to Well Armed Radio. Nick Clark, host of Well Armed Radio. Have a good set of callers on that last topic, from North Dakota to central Wisconsin to here in Milwaukee. So thanks to those who called in. Our next story here, Carroll College. So I want to start with the backstory here. And if obviously anybody listening now, we're internet only at this point, Well Armed Radio. So you're either listening from a computer or from a smartphone. There's an app to listen to this broadcast from a smartphone. If you're near a computer, I'd encourage you to go to the Well Armed Radio Facebook page, facebook.com/wellarmedradio, and take a peek at the links that I posted April 16th, 2013, just over a month ago. Carroll College, we had an incident where a man with a gun, and I remember I kind of watched the news during the day. From my real job outside of my volunteer work for Wisconsin Carry, but I tend to be on the phone a lot with clients across the country, actually around the world. I do business in 49 states and 34 countries. But I'll be on the phone, I'll be on hold, I'll be leaving a voicemail, and I always click on the news websites. And I remember Fox News even had this release at that little red banner at the top of their page, Wisconsin University on lockdown. So April 16th, Carroll College, there was a report of a man with a gun. Campus goes on lockdown. Instantly goes off to all these news media outlets. Again, Fox News, I mean, I saw it on national media. This was the day after the Boston bombings, so certainly that probably had something to do with it in terms of the quick media reaction. You know, some people might be suspecting, is this related? You know, is there coordinated attacks across the country? There was maybe a small contributing factor there. But so the campus goes on lockdown. News media reports start to come out. As we read these reports, I think the first – and the campus was on lockdown for quite a while. I don't have a time of exactly how long they were on lockdown, but I believe it was at least a couple of hours. You know, this wasn't a half-hour situation. It was a couple of hours. So later in the day, there were news reports, and one of those news reports, it came out that it was a non-lethal weapon, that it was an airsoft gun. Ron Ramos is I believe he's a captain in Waukesha on the police department there. And he was quoted in the media saying that this individual who is now in custody didn't do anything threatening, that it was an airsoft gun or a non-lethal airsoft type gun. And they were evaluating or investigating what charges might be filed. So right away, my radar was on that this is a situation where I think that there would be something interesting to come of the police response during the incident. And again, if you go to the Wisconsin Carry, Well Armed Radio Facebook page, you'll see these pictures. There's a photo gallery there, and you'll see these pictures of the police. They have the armored vehicles out. I believe there was two armored vehicles. When I say armored vehicles, I mean, I'm talking about military vehicles that they rolled out. Turrets, literally, turret on the top of the I think it's a turret. The hatch where you can come out of the top. I mean, they didn't have a turret-mounted gun, but there was officers standing out of the turret of these armored vehicles with, I believe they're probably M4s, automatic weapons. I mean, true automatic weapons, not the semi-automatic sporting rifles that we citizens are allowed to own. But the interesting thing here for me is that I see that kind of police response. And when that happened, I mean, this is literally what I said to myself. Once the armored vehicles come out, someone's getting a ticket, at least a ticket. So certainly, we watched media reports later that day. Again, go to the Facebook page, facebook.com/wellarmedradio, and take a look at these pictures. I'll kind of describe them to you if you're listening on a smartphone. There's pictures where there's one picture where they're putting the suspect in the back of a squad car. Another picture where they've got the armored there's a green armored vehicle. I'm not sure if that was Waukesha, City of Waukesha, or Waukesha County. I think the green one might be Waukesha County. They've got it up on the curb over the grass, and there's a SWAT line of there's one officer with a riot shield, and there's two plain clothes officers. Looks like one male and one female behind them. I mean, and then there's another officer in body armor with a dog behind them. So I mean, these guys are going all out. There's another picture with the armored vehicle, and again, that same line of people. I believe there was, but from the other reports, another picture in that sequence on that slideshow from this Journal Sentinel link shows an officer at the corner of a house with his, again, I'm going to assume that's an M4, pointed around the side of a building, covering the apartment where the suspect was taken out of, riot shields, I mean, the whole bit. So that's the backstory here. The police came out, Waukesha County Sheriff, Waukesha Police Department, had their armored vehicles out, and once those armored vehicles come out, you know, someone's getting a ticket. So later in the day, through media outlets, I began reaching out to the individual via the comment section, and the gentleman's name was Michael, who had been arrested and charged with disorderly conduct. So I began reaching out to him through media comment sections, I think Channel 4, a television station, and JS Online, suggesting that Wisconsin Carry would like to speak with him, that we think he might have been unlawfully arrested. The next morning, one of our members went over to his apartment. From one of the news reports, he was able to see the building. And one of our members went over to make contact with this gentleman, Michael, and offer our assistance. So he did, and called me from his cell phone sitting in the apartment with this gentleman. We asked to, obviously offered our help to him. Even to take a step back, you know, how I reached out to him originally was through those comment sections on JS Online and Channel 4. And in those comment sections, there was information being released, and one of those comments was that the man was intoxicated. I mean, this is in the comment section of these media articles. So it was clear to me right away, and I didn't see that in any news reports. So I think that the police were commenting in these comment sections as well, because they're the ones that would have known that information, that the gentleman who was arrested was intoxicated at the time he was arrested. He blew a .12. So they're setting this thing up. We reached out to him. We made contact with him the next day, offered our help. Unfortunately, in the situation, originally he was receptive to our help. He was going to think about it. This gentleman is, and I don't want this to sound pejorative. I think there's some cognitive issues there. So what happened was he was picking through trash, and this is something he does on a regular basis, found a broken airsoft gun, and he wanted to sell it to a friend, make a couple bucks. Stopped at a gas station on the way back to his house. Some people in the gas station, you know, saw him, talk to him, goes back to his apartment. But he passed a couple students on the way, and these students from Carroll College were the ones that called the police. So we were unable to help him. He originally thought that he was going to take our help, and then he called me back, 15 minutes later and said, you know, I don't want your help. I just want this to go away. And so, unfortunately, Wisconsin Carry is unable to help people who, you know, are unwilling to accept our help. And even, you know, given his disposition, I think there was perhaps some mild mental health issues. You know, he might say yes to our help one minute, but then the next day, if he says no, he doesn't want our help, for Wisconsin Carry to allocate resources to that type of a situation and then have him again withdraw his request for our help. It was just a situation where we weren't unfortunately able to help. The brother of the gentleman who was arrested actually reached out to me as well, saw my comments on the media reports, comment sections of those the paper and the TV stations. And he reached out to me, and I had a nice conversation with him as well. But unfortunately, again, he doesn't have any power of attorney over his brother. So we were unable to help, and that was disappointing. So now we're going to get close here to the information that I've uncovered. Open records requests. Take the opportunity here now, because the information that I gained was through open records requests, but I want to take the opportunity to talk about open requests in general. And first is, you know, open records requests, what are they? How do you make one? What does it cost? the Freedom of Information Act is where these open records laws are born out of. So in Wisconsin, a lot of states, they call these freedom of information, but here in Wisconsin, they call them open records. So basically you have, as a citizen, the right to inspect records that the government maintains. Now, obviously there's classified records that, you know, they have, you know, the FBI and CIA has, but the majority of records that the government maintains, you as a citizen have a right to see. How you do that is through these open records requests. Open records requests, there's nothing complicated. There is no specific letter. There's no keywords. There's no magic words. I mean, you can literally just call, and I guess the only keywords that I would use is open records request. But even that, again, there are no magical words. If you just call and say, I would like to inspect these records, they have an obligation to provide them to you. So you can do it by phone. Doesn't have to be in writing. You can do it by phone. You can do it by email. You can do it by a letter. Some people do that by certified letters. They can document that they were received. The ways that you would request and do an open records request is really up to you. The ways that are practical usually involve being able to document that you made the request, because if they do not accommodate your request, you want to have documentation. You want to have documentation that you made the request and that it was, you know, whether it was denied or was not responded to. So I generally make them, I leave a voicemail message and I also send an email so that I have documentation that I've made these open records requests. There can be a cost associated with them. If they're going to photocopy the records, there's a photocopy cost. If they're going to, in the case of this Waukesha incident, I made an open records request and I said that if there's, you know, any records that could be delivered electronically, I would like them electronically. If they can't be delivered electronically, you know, I gave them the Wisconsin Carry Post Office box. And I think they charged me it was either $147 or $174, I can't remember. But I thought that was high. They said that, you know, it took 4 hours for someone to put this together. And in the initial letter, they said that his cost of this employee with salary and benefits was $47 an hour for this person at the Waukesha Police Department. So I made that open records request by email, and then I called and left a few messages to follow up to it. And after I made that call, I got a call from Captain Ron Ramis from Waukesha Police Department, who is the one that was quoted in the paper saying that this gentleman who was arrested before the gentleman was charged, he's the one that was quoted in the paper saying that he hadn't done anything threatening. So I spoke with him, and this happens from time to time. Once Wisconsin Carry gets involved and starts making open records requests, then the police are on their toes and they know that they're probably about to get sued. On a side note here, in the past week, I've even had some other conversations with some chiefs of police, and I won't name departments, but here in Southeast Wisconsin, and there's a Chiefs of Police Association, and word really travels around that Chiefs of Police Association of the impact that Wisconsin Carry has had and how active we are, how motivated our members are. You know, we've killed some legislation very quickly that the chiefs of police tried to get through legislature, so they're really well aware of the ability that Wisconsin Carry has on a grassroots level. And that's really a testament to you folks out there listening, all of our members. You know, thank you for what you do, because it really reflects in the respect that the Right to Carry movement and Wisconsin Carry has among, you know, legislators. And again, that's all a result of not my efforts, but your efforts as members picking up the phone and calling your legislators. So back to this open records request. I make an open records request. Waukesha Police Department realizes they're probably about to get sued. So Captain Ron gives me a call. We had a conversation. You know, he tried telling me that because the gun was in this gentleman's hand, not in a sling, that makes a difference. And I said to him, I don't think that does make a difference. There's nothing statutorily that says that a gun in your hand, being carried in your hand, is threatening. But if it was, you know, he suggested that if it was slung over his back, he wouldn't have been charged. And that didn't really make a lot of sense to me. I posed some hypothetical scenarios to him. You know, my daughters are shooting airsoft in the front yard. A neighbor calls, or a passerby just calls police and says, oh, there's some kids with guns. And if the police show up with the armored vehicles, I pose this question to him, are my daughters going to get charged with disorderly conduct? And he said, no, that would be different. You know, and that's what they always say. They always say that this situation where they've cited someone, and my belief, unlawfully, is different. That's what they said in Madison after they arrested the Madison Five. I had the opportunity to debate Noble Ray, the police chief, and that's what he said. His Joel Despain, his chief information officer, after I debated Noble Ray on Wisconsin I about the Madison 5 incident, they said, you know, Nick, we really support the right to carry in the Second Amendment, but these guys were disorderly. You know, they were, the situation was, and that's, it, they weren't. And, you know, we sued Madison, we won. But that's what they always say. You know, this situation, they're always trying to say that this situation where they screwed up and cited someone that shouldn't have been, again, in my opinion, was different. So now that's open records request. The other scenario that I posed to him was, you know, let's say a guy, you know, lives in the city limits and he wants to go squirrel hunting and he was going to walk from inside of Waukesha County, Waukesha city limits. He's going to walk a few miles to outside of city limits and squirrel hunt on his friend's property. You know, is that person going to be cited for disorderly conduct? Because open carry of a firearm is not disorderly conduct. So, and he said, oh, no, that situation would be different. And again, so I thought there was a lot of doublespeak on behalf of the police. I don't really think that he could articulate to me what was so disorderly. I think the only thing disorderly that happened here was the police response, and we're about to get to that. So the results of the open records request I have in my hand right here, Waukesha Police Department incident report. So I'm trying to go through this. The timeline here is very important. The timeline of this incident. The first report, the first officer's report that I have is from Officer Bergen. I take it back. Raymond Furstenberg is the first officer whose report that I have. I think I'm going to preface this with the audio. And listen to this audio. This is the first 911 call that came in regarding the gun scare. Before I play that, maybe I will read this portion. Tuesday, April 16th, 10:33, so 10:30 in the morning, Waukesha police personnel responded to 316 North Barstow Street, area of Carroll University, for a man with a long gun call. Dispatch advised that two Carroll University students saw a white male in his 50s walking through the Carroll University area outside with a long gun. They believed this to be a rifle or a shotgun. The man with the gun was last seen traveling in a southwest direction from 316 North Barstow Street. I went to Google Maps. If you look at this, when the man was walking, he was walking away from the campus. So that's one thing to keep in mind. Officer Hennon and I first arrived in the area, did not locate anyone. Sergeant Rice took command and initiated the response of calling outside help. This included our detective bureau, the Waukesha County Bearcat and canine units. Waukesha County Bearcat, that's the armored vehicle that they, that's the big military vehicle that the police brought out. Officer Young and I went to the Barstow building, 316 North Barstow, in order to meet with witnesses. Officer Young and I met with the witnesses. I'm going to withhold the names here. One witness's name is, I'll use first names. One witness's name is Ashley. The other is Casey. Carroll University security officer was also present. The two students, witnesses, who did not know each other before this incident, were outside and observed the white male in his 50s carrying a long gun. He was outside, and they described it as having a long, dark-colored stock. Also advised, and I'm cutting out some names here, but one of the witnesses advised that it looked like the gun was folded backwards at the halfway point in the length of the gun. This was confirmed later as the recovered gun was broke at that position and probably was flopping back and forth. So the guy's walking with a broken gun that's flopping back and forth. This is all very important to keep in mind the timeline here. The witnesses were stressed and shook up over seeing this individual with the gun. They advised that he was carrying the gun in his hand and that it was not slung. The witnesses found this to be very alarming, and they subsequently reported this to campus safety. Didn't call 911, reported it to campus safety. As the incident continued, an individual was identified by a local service station as being the individual with the gun. Refer to Detective Bergen's supplement. So, two students walking to class passed this guy who had a broken gun in his hand. Now, this is the police interpretation here. This is how they put this in the report. Now, I'm going to play you the first 911 call. This is what I've obtained from the open records request. I'm going to play this first clip. This is the first 911 call that came in to Waukesha Police Department. It's about a minute long.
Waukesha City 911, what's the address of your emergency?
What's the address here? 304 Grand Avenue. We're right across from the Carroll University.
Waukesha City 911, what's the address of your emergency?
What's the address here? 304 Grand Avenue. We're right across from the Carroll University.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Citgo Mart, and we had a customer that came in right before all the police showed up, and he had a gun.
Okay.
It wasn't a real gun. It was a plastic one. He laid
like a shotgun or a handgun?
It looked like a shotgun.
Okay.
And so we looked at him, and he said, no, this is not a real gun. I just found this in the trash. And he put it on the floor. He went and made a purchase, and then he left. And we said, you shouldn't be walking around with that gun. And he said, well, maybe I should hide it. And I said, no, that's going to be worse. And then he left.
Okay, was he a male, white, male, black?
He was a white male. He had long blonde hair. Is he a normal one of our customers?
Yes.
Yeah, he's one of our regular customers.
And I know he lives on Maple.
And he lives over on Maple. And
what?
I don't know.
What did you say about Maple?
That's where he lives, in some apartments.
Yes.
He's one of our regular customers, and we just...
Okay, hold on just a moment.
Okay.
So, again, my apologies there. What happened is I started playing that clip, and then I had muted my microphone. I stopped playing the clip to give you another commentary when I set that clip up. The first 911 call, I didn't put the audio through. This clip was the call that came from the gas station across the street. So in this second clip, the one that I just played, the person calling, the first 911 call came in. Officers responded to that 911 call to the witnesses. This second call that came in was from the gas station. And this gas station is very important, and I'm going to get to that in a minute. So keep the timeline here. Officers respond, talk to the witnesses who said they saw a gun. But even in that, the witnesses who saw that gun were telling officers that it was broke at the middle. So now again, we've got now the campus goes on lockdown after that call. And even in that first call, the witnesses said the gun was broke in the middle. And the officer even states that in his police report. Now we had that second call, which I just played for you, from the gas station. And that call from the gas station, I don't know if it was the clerk or the owner, but the person calling from that gas station, who then sees police outside and all these police cars, calls 911 and tells them that the man that they're looking for had a fake gun. She said it several times. It was a fake gun. It was a toy gun. So the police, the dispatcher knew at that point that the gun was fake. That's before the officers even arrived at the gas station. And that's important because this gas station is kind of the pivoting point of where the police get their information. So police respond to the first 911 call, talk to witnesses, then police go to the gas station. The gas station attendant called 911 before the police got there, told them it was a fake gun. Then the police come to the gas station. Now I'm going to play you the second clip from the caller from the gas station, clip number two.
Okay, and how long ago was this?
This happened like right before all the police came, and we just now put it together. Is this what they're looking for?
Yes.
We don't know
because
we just saw it on the news. We just finally saw it on the news because we thought, oh.
I'm going to stop it there. Right there, about 8 seconds into that clip, the dispatcher acknowledges, yes, this is the person they're looking for. So the dispatcher was already told it was a fake gun, and the dispatcher acknowledges that that's the person they're looking for. And this is minutes into this incident. Minutes into this incident, the police were aware, the dispatcher was aware it was a fake gun, and the dispatcher acknowledged that that this was the person that they were looking for. I'm going to continue to play that clip. This clip is about just over a minute.
Okay, and how long ago was this?
This happened like right before all the police came, and we just now put it together. Is this what they're looking for?
Yes.
We don't know because
yes.
We just saw it on the news. We just finally saw it on the news because we thought, oh, are they thinking that his gun was real? Maybe it was a rifle. It looked like a BB gun or something.
Okay, and he lived where?
He lives over on Maple in some apartment. He's one of our regular customers. He comes in all the time.
Do you know what his name is?
Do you know his name?
Michael Weiner.
I mean, this may not have anything to do with that.
Well, I bet it does. How do you spell the last name, do you think?
Do you know how to spell the last name? No.
Like Oscar Mayer Weiner?
Like Oscar Mayer Weiner.
Is that how it's being pronounced?
Yeah. Hold on. Here's the police right now. I just wanted to let you know we had a customer.
Okay, you go ahead and talk to them, ma'am.
Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Okay, so at the end of that call, a couple of interesting things that came out during that call. They acknowledged that this was the person that they were looking for, reiterated that it was a fake gun. The dispatcher now knows it's a fake gun. At that point, wouldn't you think that the call that goes out over the dispatch is going to be attention all units, gas station clerk made contact with the suspect in this case, just be aware it's an airsoft gun. At that point, you could put the M4s down, you can put the riot shields down, you can park the armored car. If you want to still investigate, you can, they can certainly investigate. But now you have witnesses saying that this was a fake gun and corroborating that they have the correct person. The dispatch is aware of it. Now, and again, the other important thing here is now at the end of that call, what you heard was the police are going into the gas station. This gas station attendant clerk is very important to this story because what happens is the gas station clerk is the one who tells the police, you heard them tell the dispatcher, that gas station clerk is the one who tells the police who the gentleman is and where he lives. So the only way that the police end up outside of this gentleman Michael's apartment is because the gas station clerk told them who he was and where he lived. So here's where I'm going to go to the second police report. This is from a different officer. 416, April 16th, squads were dispatched to the area of Carroll University on a report of a man with a gun. During the incident, employees of Citco, 304 North Grand Avenue, called to report a man with a gun had been in their store, approximately the same time as the incident reported at Carroll University. Contact was made with employees who identified the subject as a regular customer, Michael Wiedemann. Information provided by the employees led to the location and apprehension of Wiedemann. Refer to narrative for details. Investigation is ongoing. The police knew when they got to they say right here in the incident report, the police report, the officer says that the employees of Citco called to report a man with a gun had been in their store. That's not what they called to report. The people from the Citco called to report that it was a fake gun and that the gentleman had been in their store with a fake gun. Left out of the police report that it was a fake gun. The police knew it was a fake gun when they got to that gas station. They knew it was a fake gun before they knew who they were looking for. They knew it was a fake gun before they went to this gentleman's apartment. This police report goes on. All available squads were dispatched to the area of Carroll University and reported a man walking through their campus carrying a gun. Further description was that of an older male, 50 to 60 years of age, wearing a brown coat and carrying a rifle or shotgun. The male was observed walking westbound anyway. Again, he's walking away from Carroll, from the university. Dispatch advised the employees of the Citco station located at 304 North Grand Avenue had information about a man that had been in their store around the time of the original call. They reported this man had a gun with him. I responded to the Citco station and spoke with two clerks on duty. I'm not going to say their names, first names only, Cynthia and Luis. In speaking with Cynthia and Luis, they stated that one of their customers, Michael Weiner, had been in the store earlier. They stated that when Weiner walked into the store, he had a rifle with him. Now, again, this police report, they referenced the dispatch advised that employees of the Citco station had information about a man that had been in their store around the time of the original call. They reported that this man had a gun with him. That is not what the people called to report. They were called to report that he had a fake gun with him. So the police were well aware that this was a fake gun when they got to the gas station. Now this officer actually, and the first officer never even references the fake gun when he talks about it. This is the second officer's report. Weiner told them that he, I'll start a little bit farther back. These two employees, Cynthia and Luis, in speaking with Cynthia and Luis, stated that one of their regular customers, Michael Wiener, who is actually Michael Wiedemann, had been in the store earlier. They stated that when Wiener walked into the store, he had a rifle with him. At first, they thought the rifle was real. However, Wiener told them he had just found it in the trash. They looked more closely and saw that it, in fact, appeared to be a toy gun. Lincoln stated that she was more familiar with Wiener as a regular customer and was surprised that he would have a gun with him. She stated that after he said it was a toy and she looked closer, she could see that it was a plastic gun. Goes on to say that he asked this gentleman with the fake gun, asked if he should conceal it, and they told him that was not a good idea either. He left the store. These two employees, believing that the gun was a toy and that Wiener appeared to be in a good mood and had not been threatening in any way, did not think anything of it at the time. So the people from the gas station didn't call the police to report a man with the gun. It was a regular customer. They knew it was a fake gun, and he left. Now, when the police left that gas station, then they knew where this guy lived and that it was a fake gun. But did that stop them from going over there with M4s out of the turret of an armored military vehicle? It didn't. And at that point, this is where the police response becomes so shocking, is that they knew it was a fake gun and they went over there with such a tactical response to get a guy who had what they knew at that time was an airsoft gun. Reading through the police report, there's a few other comments. You know, they talked to the original witnesses, who again stated that the barrel was folded over. These two witnesses, who didn't know each other before, when they passed Mr. Wiedemann, who was carrying this broken fake gun, if that was indeed a gun, and the two witnesses said, yeah, it was, and then they went to the campus police, didn't call 911, went to the campus police. This next, another officer here, Officer Christopher Massa, dispatch advised over the radio that the gas station on the corner of Grand and Williams had advised that they had a white male subject walk into their store prior to our arrival. The male subject matched the description and was carrying a rifle or shotgun with him. The clerk stated that they believed they knew who the subject was because he is a regular customer. Missing from all these police reports are that these individuals called and reported that it was a fake gun before the police even got to the gas station. Here we go with the officer's description of what they did with the armored vehicle. We then made our way over to 201 Maple Avenue and parked our armored vehicle in front of the residence. The City of Waukesha Police Department armored car was also brought to the scene and parked in the back of the residence. So now we have Waukesha County Police with their military vehicle, and we have Waukesha County with their military vehicle on both sides of the residence, with gentlemen, with officers with automatic weapons trained on the apartment. And this whole time, they know that it's a fake gun. Goes on to say, Lieutenant, I'm going to say his name wrong here, Lieutenant Mormon of the Waukesha County Sheriff's Department did make several commands using the PA system on the Bearcat armored vehicle to no avail. Sergeant Becker then used the PA system on the City of Waukesha Police Department's armored car, and again, there was no response. So here we have Waukesha County with their military vehicle in front of the building. We have Waukesha Police Department with their military vehicle in the back of the building, going out on their loudspeakers, ordering this guy out of his apartment. They knew at the time that it was a fake airsoft gun, but that didn't stop them from pointing their automatic weapons at this building where there's plenty of other people living. It didn't stop the police from setting up a perimeter with automatic weapons pointed at the apartment from various angles, and they knew the whole time that it was a fake gun. At this point, I'm going to read more from the report here. At this point, it was determined that we would make limited entry into 201 Maple Avenue and make announcements from the hallway. Again, myself, Detective Serrano, Detective Stucker, Detective Fisher, Detective Benitez, Deputy Hebring entered 201 Maple Avenue. Due to the fact that there was a first and second floor, I, along with Deputy Hebring, did take the lower level, while Detective Serrano, Stucker, Fisher, Benitez took the upper level. While inside, I did hear Detective giving orders to Michael Wiedemann to come out. Wiedemann was eventually taken into custody, and Detective Benitez, along with Detective Hebring, cleared the apartment. Once the apartment was clear, I did observe what appeared to be some type of black composite-type rifle laying on the ground in front of the main room just to the left of the entry door. The gun appeared to be some type of pellet airsoft gun. Upon closer examination of the gun, it did appear that the stock was broken, and it ultimately appeared to be some type of airsoft gun. It should be noted, however, the gun stock was completely black and the barrel of the gun was a silver-gray color. It should be noted, while this was an airsoft-type gun, it did look somewhat realistic. Okay. Detectives did locate the brown jacket hanging in the closet. It should be noted that the beer that was reportedly purchased at the gas station was also in the residence. There were two empty cans sitting on the kitchen table and two empty cans sitting on the kitchen counter and two full cans sitting in the fridge. These cans of beer were Keystone Light. Well, I can't say that that Michael Wiedemann has very good taste in beer. But so I'm going to back up a second here. Remember that the police, I'm going to say police, I suspect because they were the only ones that knew, early on in this incident, there was information being released to, and I don't know if it if this kind of thing goes over the police scanners, but there was information being released in media reports, in the comment section of media reports, that he was intoxicated. There's no evidence that he was intoxicated. And again, this is all an attempt to sway the public into seeing the situation differently than it really was. Again, once the armored car comes out, someone's got to get a ticket. Someone's got to have egg on their face, and it's not going to be the law enforcement response. So the police knew before they went to the apartment that it was an airsoft gun. They still went guns, you know, automatic weapons drawn, tactical response. Then we get reports, these reports that the gentleman was intoxicated were completely false. He was intoxicated when they arrested him, which was probably at least an hour after he left the gas station. He bought beer at the gas station. So what happened here was he found a gun in the garbage, stopped at the gas station on the way home to get a six-pack, got home, sat down and had a couple beers, and then he's sitting in his apartment, and all of a sudden the police show up with armored vehicles and automatic weapons when they knew it was an airsoft gun the whole time. I can't say the whole time. They knew it was an airsoft gun before they even knew where they were going to find Michael Wiedemann. And that's what I find just shocking. I mean, at this point now there's no detail about how they gained. It sounds like he came to the door, and one of the other officers does state that he was taken down and tactically handcuffed. It's funny to see the police speak in these police reports. Tactically handcuffed means they threw him on the ground and they slapped the handcuffs on him. Here it is. I performed the surrender ritual. this is a police officer's words. After making announcements for the second time, Wiedemann came out of his apartment number 8 with his hands up in the air. I performed the surrender ritual on Wiedemann. He was then tactically handcuffed without incident. Escorted him to the squad, blah, blah, blah. So that's the compilation of what happened in that Waukesha County gun scare. Police find out that dispatch is called. They're informed that it's a fake gun. Dispatch informs the officers it's a fake gun. The officers then go to talk to the witnesses at the gas station, who tell them again that it's a fake gun before they even tell him where to find the gentleman. But that doesn't stop the police from going with M4s out the turret to the apartment with their armored vehicles and conducting this operation. When I came to Wisconsin, Kerry, and if you have a comment on this, if you find this as surprising as I do, feel free to give me a call, 646-716-8739, 646-716-8739. The lack of discretion, the lack of common sense, the lack of, I'm looking for the right word here, the lack of prudence on behalf of police response in some of these situations is just shocking. You know, we had the Madison 5, the 911 call there where the lady said, oh, they're not threatening anybody. They're not doing anything wrong. I just wondered if it was legal. And boom, 10 officers show up in force. I mean, we see this over and over again, that the police overreact and it's not even an ambiguous situation. The people at the gas station didn't even call the police when they saw that the gun was fake and that he wasn't threatening anybody. I'm not surprised that a couple, female college students, I don't know if Carroll College is a liberal arts college or not. I mean, Waukesha County is a conservative area. But, you know, here's two young kids who see a guy with a gun, which is, you know, broken over at the front, didn't call 911, went inside, told campus police. But it's just shocking that when the police knew that this was a fake gun. The armored vehicles didn't get put away. The M4s didn't get put away. The riot shields didn't get put away. In fact, they came out after they found out it was a fake gun. This is the kind of thing that really taints my opinion of law enforcement over and over. And if you have a comment, 646-716-8739. But that's the Waukesha County, Waukesha Carroll College Airsoft. We've got a caller here. We'll take this one, get some response here. Good evening. Welcome to Alarm Radio.
Yes, this is Bruce up in central Wisconsin.
Hey, Bruce, how are you?
Well, it could be a little warmer.
So what did you think? Had you heard of the incident at Carroll College before I talked about it tonight?
Yes, it kind of irritates me. You know, people just have to be more relaxed. And, you know, concerning open carry, it's just I don't know what to say.
Yeah, I mean, and I can't fault the students. You know, people are people. People are dumb. I mean, a good percentage of people just have very little common sense. But who I fault in this situation, and thanks for calling, Bruce. I'm going to let you go because I got another caller coming on here. But who I fault in this situation is the police. The police should be the ones who are the professionals here. When a witness calls in, and again, the witnesses didn't call and report a man with a gun. The witnesses went to campus police, and the campus police called 911. The original 911 call, and I apologize because I thought I had that one clipped here. That was supposed to be my first clip. But the campus police were the ones that originally called 911. I'm actually going to try and multitask here and see if I do have that original call in my I don't think I do. I thought I had pulled that one off, but the campus police were the ones that make the original call to the 911 dispatch. But the police are the ones that I expect to be the professionals here. So when a witness calls and says there's a man with a gun, I expect the police to say, was he doing anything threatening? Was he pointing the gun at anybody? Did he look like he was threatening anybody? I mean, these are the things that we should expect the police to do. We should expect the police to be professionals and analyze the situation. Here we have a case where the police, not only did they do everything to not analyze the situation, but once the other witnesses, the people from the CITGO station, called in and gave them the information to say that it was a fake gun, because even forget the fact if it was even a fake gun, even before that, the guy wasn't doing anything threatening. He walked by two students and said hi and walked by. The gun was folded over. I mean, I already hear the police should have been thinking to themselves, you know, this doesn't sound like a tactical situation. And if they still want to bring the armored car out at that point, fine. Bring your armored car out. If they still want to get the M4s, if you want to dust the M4s off because you haven't gotten to play with your automatic weapons recently, bring those out. But why not when you talk to the people at the gas station who tell you that it's a fake gun? Do you not adjust your response? And again, my argument is still that before that, they should have been, as police tell us how much training they have and how professional they are, shouldn't they have been, especially on a man with a gun call? You know, I'm confident that 911 dispatchers get a lot of calls that really don't deserve to go to 911. But when you get a man with a gun call, isn't that the one that should be a red flag? Hey, let's really put the analytical skills to work here and dissect this call and make sure that we're not overreacting, because open carry is legal in Wisconsin. And this ties into our first topic of open carry. So it's frustrating to see, and the most frustrating thing here was that we weren't able to help this gentleman. Coincidentally, I think the students at Carroll College were taking a collection to pay for his fine. I don't know if that ended up happening or not. I believe they did give money to him. But the police response here, I'll be honest, I expect more from police. I expect that when the police get a man with a gun call, not a man shooting, not a man. I mean, you listen to the calls from, you know, the Sikh temple, from Azana. I mean, there's a guy shooting. But this man with a gun that didn't come from 911, that came from students who took the time to walk to campus police. I mean, this is where we should expect more of the police. This is where we should expect the police to do a little bit of over the phone research, use some discretion and do what professionals would do and assess the situation. Is he threatening anybody? Did he do anything threatening to you? Tell me about the gun. Was it, you know, none of that happened. And then the police are told that it's a fake gun, and they, after finding out that it's a fake gun, still want to play with their military vehicles and their M4s, and they go pull this guy out of his apartment at gunpoint with tactical response. I'm going to wrap this segment up. If anybody else has a comment, 646-716-8739. I don't see anybody calling in, so we'll move on to the next one. We're running about 9:25 here, so we have usually run about 90 minutes on these. Maybe we'll go a little bit over. I'm not going to get to all of my topics today. The next topic that I had on the list here, we'll do this one quickly. I'm a member, or I shouldn't say member, as the chairman of Wisconsin Carry, there's an organization, I'm using the wrong word, there's a group called Gun Leaders. And what Gun Leaders is a group of non-affiliated right to carry groups. So for example, these non-affiliated groups would be groups that are not affiliated with the NRA, Wisconsin Carry, Georgia Carry, Minnesota Civil Rights, Minnesota Gun Owners Civil Rights Alliance. Dozens and dozens and dozens. There's probably 50 or 60 of these groups that are part of this list, I guess I'll say, that we communicate, these non-affiliated heads of these organizations. And this particular information was passed along to me through that list. And this has been in other news reports, but New Jersey. There's a case in New Jersey where there was this involves federal transport. With summer upon us, I know a lot of people are traveling with their guns, and certainly, you know, I'm here in Milwaukee, and you go 50 miles to the south, and you're going to be in the land of currently no constitutional right to carry, where that is denied. A side note, this idea came to me last week. I thought it would be great billboard for Wisconsin Carry to write in the border, put up a big, huge sign that says you're about to enter the land of Lincoln, where your right to carry, where your constitutional rights, and I haven't, you know, thought of the perfect verbiage yet, but you're about, big, big black billboard with white lettering, you're about to enter enter Illinois, enter the land of Lincoln, where your constitutionally guaranteed rights are non-existent. Please have your guns unloaded and in a case, locked and out of reach. I think that would be a great billboard. I don't know what the cost would be. I think a billboard on 94, high traffic area like that is probably pretty expensive, but I thought that would be fun. Now, of course, Illinois is perhaps on the verge of passing concealed carry law. Who knows if there'll be reciprocity with anybody. So perhaps there's still an opportunity to have some fun with a billboard like that. But what a way to take a nice little poke at Illinois and at the same point, you know, do a public service and let people know that literally when you cross that border to Illinois, you better have that gun unloaded and in a case, or you could be in big trouble. So this case from New Jersey, there was a gentleman who, some of you might have heard of this before, but again, I was alerted to this from the Gun Leaders list this past week. You know, Texas man arrested with 21 guns in his car while passing through New Jersey 4 years ago will remain in prison after an appeals court on Monday upheld his conviction in a case that would wind up in front of the state supreme that could wind up in front of the state supreme court. Dustin Reininger is serving a 5-year sentence with a 3-year minimum before he's eligible for parole. A jury convicted him in absentia in 2010 on several weapons counts, including illegal possession of shotguns, rifles, hollow point bullets, and a high-capacity magazine, after police found him sleeping in his car behind a bank in Readington early in the morning of March 20th, 2009. Redinger, who was listed as living in Rockport, Texas, initially denied having guns in his car, but after noticing two firearms cases in the back seat, police searched the vehicle and found 14 rifles, 4 shotguns, 3 handguns, along with bullets and magazine. Redinger told police he was moving to Texas from Maine and was transporting the weapons, which his attorney says he legally owned. Attorney Evan Knappen said Monday the warrantless search of his client's vehicle was troubling, and he said he would likely appeal Monday's ruling to the state Supreme Court on that and other grounds. So what happened here was this gentleman going from Maine to Texas stopped to sleep, and the federal firearm transport, I think the actual name is Firearm Owners Protection Act, FOPA, F-O-P-A. But basically the federal transport law states that, and this is where back during open carry, we always talked about how you have to unload it, and in a case is how you would transport. Oftentimes people mistakenly said unloaded in a case and out of reach. That out of reach part is from the federal transport law. That was not the law here in Wisconsin. In Wisconsin, before Act 35, it just had to be unloaded and in a case. But a provision of the federal law known as the Firearm Owners Protection Act, or FOPA, F-O-P-A, protects those who are transporting firearms for lawful purposes from local restrictions which would otherwise prohibit passage. Under FOPA, notwithstanding any state or local law, a person is entitled to transport a firearm from any place where he or she may lawfully possess and carry such a firearm to any other place where he or she may lawfully possess and carry it. If the firearm is unloaded and locked out of reach, in vehicles without a trunk, the unloaded firearm must be in a locked container other than the glove compartment or console. This is what happened. This is what tripped up this guy here. When I say tripped up, he's in prison serving a minimum 3-year sentence. So even if this guy wins his appeal at the state court, which I don't know if he will, but he's already served a great deal of time in prison. And if he wins his appeal, his time already served is going to be extensive. So the damage, so to speak, has been done. Travelers, and I bring this up as a topic now, Memorial Day weekend, vacation season begins. When you are traveling out of the state of Wisconsin, there are states that have reciprocity. Illinois is not one of them. Most of the places you're going to go, I mean, a lot of people go north, so if you're going north, it's less of a concern. But if you're going south, I mean, the minute you cross that border into Illinois, your guns must be unloaded in a case, in the trunk, because then they're locked in the trunk. If they're in the passenger compartment, they need to be locked in a case, not locked in the glove compartment, not locked in the center console, locked in a case. That's the law in Illinois. When you're traveling this summer, don't take the risk of crossing that border into Illinois and ending up with a federal conviction. Outside of Illinois, you know, Wisconsin has reciprocity with many states. If you are traveling, handgunlaw.us is a great website, www.handgunlaw.us. A lot of information there. You can look at the states you're traveling through, click on the state, they'll tell you the local laws. If you're looking for reciprocity with Wisconsin, you can go to, if you Google Wisconsin DOJ concealed carry reciprocity, or just Google Wisconsin DOJ concealed carry, that'll take you to the Wisconsin Department of Justice website, where they have a list of states that currently honor Wisconsin's permit. Without getting too much on a side topic, there's a caveat to that. Your concealed carry license from Wisconsin does not exempt you from school zones in other states. In order to be exempted from the school zones, because there's a federal gun-free school zone statute, if you want to be completely safe from the federal gun-free school zone law, you have to have a permit from the state that you are in, issued by the state you are in. So, in other words, in Wisconsin, the only permit that protects you from the federal gun-free school zone statute in Wisconsin is a Wisconsin permit. In Florida, the only permit that protects you from someone's going to yell at me for using permit instead of license here. Some states call it a license. Some states call it a permit. In Florida, the only permit slash license that allows you to carry without concern of that federal gun-free school zone statute is the Florida permit. You people who have a Utah permit, the only permit, you know, people get Utah because it has reciprocity with so many other states. That's true, but not for the gun-free school zones. The gun-free school zones, you have to have a permit from the state that you are in. It can be a non-resident permit, but it cannot be a permit from another state. There's a lot of research that's been done on this. It's well documented. I've been working with a gentleman named Grant for many years on this issue. If you go to Wikipedia, he's put up all the documentation there. He has the letter from the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms, where he talks about where that letter specifically states that you must have a permit issued by the state you are in. So that's another thing to keep in mind. Now, having that said, most people are going to tell you that you don't have to worry that local police aren't going to enforce the federal gun-free school zone statute. That may be true, but I have to be honest with you, you trust your government a whole lot more than I do, and especially in light of all the recent scandals in Washington, D.C., and seeing how the power of the federal government is being used against people. I know myself, as the head of a gun organization here in Wisconsin, I'm not going to take the chance when I go out of state that there's not some enterprising law enforcement agent who wouldn't just love to nail me to the wall with a federal felony if I get pulled over for speeding in a gun-free school zone and I'm using my Wisconsin permit that has reciprocity with that state but doesn't exempt me from the school zones. So again, you trust your government far more than I do. If that wouldn't be concerning to you that your Wisconsin permit, even in states that you have reciprocity with, does not exempt you from those federal gun-free school zones. So that's the transport topic that I had. Going back to my outline here, 9:37. We might actually run 2 hours today. I think that'll be a first for me. Usually I peter out at about the 90-minute mark. Next topic I had was driving, rights versus privileges. I love this discussion because there's a lot of people who, when they talk about right to carry, they talk about the Second Amendment and how that's a right. And then they'll often have someone say, you know, this bumper sticker type slogan, if you have to have a permit or if you have to have a license to drive a car, what's wrong with a license to carry a deadly weapon? And some people's response to that is that, well, right to carry is a right and driving is a privilege. And I cringe every time I hear that. I cringe every time I hear someone say driving is a privilege. Because first, I mean, people really need to study, and I'm not knocking people who have studied the Second Amendment but haven't studied the rest of the Bill of Rights, the rest of the Constitution, the Federalist Papers, all the other things that you can read about that would really help you understand the philosophy. I mean, the Declaration of Independence, the government has absolutely no moral authority to dole out privileges. None, zero, zip, nada. Privilege is, if a government is doling out privilege, here's what privilege is. These may issue states, that's privilege. The government is doling out privilege. They're taking a right, and it's still a right, but they're treating it like a privilege. And you'll even read documentation from Department of Motor Vehicles in various states that call driving a privilege. It is not a privilege. Driving is a right. There is case law. I'm going to read some of it to you. The right to operate a motor vehicle upon the public streets and highways is not a mere privilege. It is a right or liberty, the enjoyment of which is protected by the guarantees of the federal and state constitutions. The citation here is Adams v. City of Polkate, Idaho, 1966. I'm going to read that again. The right to operate a motor vehicle upon the public streets and highways is not a mere privilege. It is a right or liberty, the enjoyment of which is protected by the guarantees of the federal and state constitutions. A right protected by not a right created by, but a right protected by the guarantees of federal and state constitutions. I'm going to read another citation for you. The right of a citizen to travel upon the public highways includes the right in doing so to use the ordinary and usual conveyances of the day, and under the existing modes of travel includes the right to drive a horse-drawn carriage or wagon thereon, or to operate an automobile thereon for the usual and ordinary purposes of life and business. The rights aforesaid being fundamental are constitutional rights, and that is Tesh Lines v. Danforth, Mississippi. That's from 1943. It says see also Thompson v. Smith. This is something that, again, frustrates me when I hear people throw certain rights under the bus to justify the Second Amendment being exercised, for example, without a license. There's a number of rights that we enjoy. Our rights are limitless. The rights that we enjoy as human beings, and I've said this, people in China have the exact same rights that you and I do. Theirs are just denied to them by their government. People who live in Russia have the exact same rights. People who live in North Korea have the exact same rights that you and I do. Theirs are just being denied to them by their government. Back to driving and privilege, there's a lot of rights that we have that are infringed upon. So when people talk about the right to carry, and when people say, why is it okay if you can have a right, if you can have a license to drive, why isn't it okay to have a license to carry a deadly weapon? The answer to that is not that driving is a privilege and right to carry is a right. The answer to that is the Second Amendment says the right to carry shall not be infringed. What part of shall not be infringed don't you understand? I'm going to work as many cliches as I can in here today. But what part of shall not be infringed don't you understand? The right to carry is a right. The right to drive is a right. It so happens that the right to drive does not have a constitutional amendment that says the right to drive shall not be infringed. If there was an amendment that said, how many amendments are we on now? I should know this. But the Bill of Rights has 10 amendments. I forget how many amendments we have to the Constitution. I think I know the number, but I'm not going to hazard my guess because if I'm wrong, I'll make myself sound like more of a fool than I already do. But if we had another amendment to the Constitution that said, I was going to say 26, and someone on the chat just said 27. So if we have 27 amendments to the Constitution, if amendment number 28 said the right to drive being fundamental shall not be infringed, then you could say that the right that you shouldn't can't have a license to drive. See, I'm not – people say that a permit turns right to carry into a privilege, and I don't believe that's the case. I believe may issue states where you can ask for a permit and they can say no, like New York – like California, that's certainly being treated as a privilege. You still have the right to carry. It's just being denied to you. But these, if they make a 27th Amendment that says the right to drive shall not be infringed, then indeed you have a constitutional right to not have your right to drive infringed by a license. I'm not convinced that people, and again, this is back to where I was going, people say that a permit takes right to carry from a right to a privilege, and if it's a shall issue permit or a must issue permit, I don't think that's the case. It's an infringement upon the right, and that's where the rub comes in, that the Second Amendment says shall not be infringed. So even places where you have to get a permit to carry, you still are exercising a right. It's not a privilege, it's a right. If it's shall issue, it's still, in my opinion, treated like a right. It's just a right infringed. The right to free speech is infringed often. You know, you can't yell fire in a theater. You can't play your music as loud as you'd want. You can't go with a bullhorn and stand in front of, you know, an event and disrupt it. So the right to free speech is infringed often. In the First Amendment, it doesn't say the right to free speech shall not be infringed. If it said the right to free speech shall not be infringed, well then, you know, you could go stand with a bullhorn and, you know, but hopefully my point's well taken, that the right, just because something isn't in the Constitution doesn't mean it's not a right. And that's the other thing people say, is if driving isn't in the Constitution, just because something isn't in the Constitution doesn't mean it's not a right. Just because there is an infringement upon your right doesn't mean it's not a right. But the Second Amendment says right to carry shall not be infringed, and that is the reason why you can have a license to exercise your right to drive, but you can't, you shouldn't, in my belief, based upon what I believe our founding fathers believed, that you shouldn't have to have a license to exercise your right to carry, your right to self-defense. So, what are we doing here? 9:45. We've got 15 minutes. I have two other topics. Maybe I'll go for it. I'm going to go for it. I'm going to try to get these in today. Second Amendment hypocrites. Are you one? We might even, this is, if we take calls on this one, we definitely won't have time to get through it. Maybe I'll tease that one. I think we'll save that one for the next show. We'll save that for next week. We'll start that one next week, Second Amendment hypocrites. I've got a lot to say on that one. I think it's going to be an angle that you have not heard before. There's a lot to be said for Second Amendment hypocrites, because I'm going to tell you, we've got a lot of Second Amendment hypocrites in Wisconsin. We've got a lot of Second Amendment hypocrites who call themselves right to carry advocates, and we're going to call them out next week, and we're going to stir it. We're going to stir it up. So I'm going to take this last 15 minutes, and I'm going to fill it with my off-topic segment of the week. You know, when I started doing Well-Armed Radio, I wanted to – the reason that I separated it from Wisconsin Carry was I wanted to be able to step away from right to carry on occasion and talk about some off-topic stuff. And one of the off-topic things that I wanted to talk about was these Washington scandals. And I'm not going to go political on this angle because – I don't think that political appeals to a lot of people. But what I am going to do is talk about leadership, and I'm going to talk about accountability, and that's the angle that I'm going to take. And this can apply to anybody. You know, I'm an executive with my real job. I'm an executive with a consulting firm, and I studied business administration, graduated from Whitewater in 98 with honors, business administration, a marketing major, economics minor. And again, I say economics minor. I was a few credits short of an actual actual minor, but I studied a lot of economics. So that's something that I want to bring to the audience here. So there's a story. You know, we're talking about these things that happened in are happening in D.C., these scandals. Benghazi, Fast and Furious, the IRS scandal, spying on the Associated Press, spying on other reporters, and I say spying, and that's my characterization. But this particular link is from Breitbart, and it basically says that that Obama had met with IRS union bosses the day before the Tea Party targeting began. And I'm not going to go into detail on that article itself, but, you know, there's some questions that aren't being asked, and everybody wants to, and I've got a call coming in here. I see the same number from 715, and I'm not sure who that is, so I apologize if I keep I'm dropping you here. I don't want to have you sitting on hold because I'm not going to take your call. I don't have time for more calls tonight. But these scandals, and they keep popping up, and it's my opinion that – based upon my knowledge of business and management and organizational structure, that there is no doubt in my mind since these scandals started popping, and I'm talking about Fast and Furious, and I'm talking about Benghazi, and I'm talking about the Associated Press, and I'm talking about the IRS targeting, there's been no doubt in my mind since these scandals started popping that Obama knew all about them. If he didn't approve them, bet your life he was briefed on them. I suspect the former. I suspect he approved them. But the last possibility, which I don't think has any logic, is that he didn't condone them and he didn't know about them. I don't think that's even possible. If that's what was really the case, then it's just an epic leadership failure. If there's these kinds of things going on in his administration, that he, and I say this just as a person in government, I don't care if you're a Republican or a Democrat, but if there's those kinds of things going on in your administration and you don't know about them, epic leadership failure. And again, having studied management and doing case studies and seeing how management structure exists from the top down, and how management and how leadership affects an organization from the top down, there's no doubt in my mind Obama knew. That said, obviously I have no proof, and there are a lot of people who are too stupid to connect dots. Maybe connecting the dots leaves too much room for interpretation. A lot of people who don't realize that just like one and one always equals two, there are some pretty universal principles of organizational structure. There are some pretty, well, there are some people, I mean, the OJ jury comes to mind. There are some people that won't believe anything unless they see the smoking gun. And again, OJ jury comes to mind. So despite no smoking gun, I knew Obama knew about the IRS targeting conservative groups. Logic dictates that he knew. Even the left-wing shill accomplice media folks who aren't stupid enough to think Obama wasn't involved, they're not dumb enough. The accomplice media in this country isn't dumb enough to think Obama's not involved. They're just playing dumb in the ends justifies the means kind of look the other way mentality because his agenda fits their agenda. I mean, think of the greater context of what Obama has said. This is a guy who's been sniffing his own underwear for so long that he proudly went on national TV and in his first televised interview after being elected, November 18, 2008, 60 Minutes, Obama was so bold as to declare, and this is his first television interview, wasn't even inaugurated yet, was so bold as to declare that he would throw his weight around to get a college football playoff system. That's the kind of arrogance and unbounded egotism that we've seen over and over from this president. And I mean, there's a million of these examples. I mean, he said in press briefings on TV that things would be easier if he was a dictator. I mean, don't forget his administration in its early days tried to deny Fox News Network from the White House press pool. I mean, emails confirm this. That's not even speculation. That's not even conspiracy theory. They actively tried to just kick Fox News out of the press pool and put some, you know, there's a certain number of cubicles in that press office there at the White House, and they just tried to deny Fox News a space, one of the largest networks. I mean, everyone misspeaks from time to time, but when it's time after time, it's really an insight into his mindset. So we are supposed to believe Obama gave thought to throwing his weight around outside of the scope of what the office of president and even the role of government entails for college football playoffs, but he wouldn't have thought to use the power within the government to use the IRS to target political foes. That doesn't pass the sniff test. I mean, not for 1 minute. Not for 1 minute. He knew about it. We just needed the smoking gun. When it comes, and the smoking gun could be this report that, not report, I mean, it's confirmed that he met with the day before they started targeting conservative, freedom-minded groups. He met with the union boss of the employees who did it. And which brings up another point. I mean, if he says that he didn't condone this and this is horrible, nobody's been fired. I mean, that woman who testified last week, I think her name was Lerner, but she took the fifth. I mean, she hasn't even been fired. She was just now reassigned. No one's been fired. I mean, if this was low-level people, there should be rounds of firing. And I'll tell you why there hasn't been rounds of firing, because if you fire people, they're going to talk. No one's talking because they still have jobs. And the best way to keep them quiet is to keep them dependent on your income for their livelihood. When you start cutting people loose, they're going to start singing. How do they say that? How do the Italians say that? Singing like a bird. We got 7 minutes left here. I'm going to try to wrap this up. When it comes to organizational structure, the CEO, and in this case the president, doesn't make all the decisions, but they are always briefed on the important ones. When critical decisions in an organization are made without briefing the CEO, I mean, in this case, the president, it's because the corporate culture that the CEO established has conditioned middle management to know exactly what he would have approved, what would have been approved and what wouldn't have. To say it another way, you don't have to go ask for permission to do something you know your boss approves of. Benghazi, Fast and Furious, DOJ spying on the AP, IRS targeting conservative groups, Obamacare shakedown scandal. If these actions were specifically condoned by Obama, and I believe they were, he should be impeached. If these actions were not specifically condoned by Obama, the only plausible explanation would be that his cabinet knows that he would have been okay with it. And going on down the line, appointed heads of departments knew the same. If his underlings didn't go to him for expressed approval on these kinds of things, it's only because they were clearly delegated the power to make those kinds of decisions for him. Leadership creates a culture, and boy, did it ever hear. Fast and Furious. If Obama didn't know about that, and I knew as soon as Hillary Clinton was on TV saying that she went down to Mexico and said that we need to stop, these guns are coming from the United States into Mexico and we need to stop them. I'm like, how does she know? I mean, that was like, I want to say it was 2009. I thought, how does she know that these guns coming into Mexico are coming from the U.S.? Well, now we know how she knew. So if Obama didn't know about those, if he didn't approve them, that is an epic failure of leadership. If he did know about them, and I believe he did, that's an epic failure, and it should be, I mean, I believe, impeachable. If Obama didn't expressly approve all these things, then his leadership created a culture where this kind of stuff was embraced. If his leadership didn't create this culture, then his lack of leadership gave free rein for his underlings to do so. And if that's the case, it's a massive failure of leadership. I wouldn't impeach a president for getting a BJ in the Oval Office. I wouldn't even impeach a president for lying about getting a BJ in the Oval Office. But I would impeach a president for either refusing to come to the aid of American citizens under fire, allowing guns to run into Mexico to kill, to fan the calls for more strict gun controls in America, using the IRS to attack political foes, spying on the press, shaking down large corporations for money for Obamacare. I mean, yes, I would impeach a president over that. So now we have the smoking gun, perhaps, with this discovery that the IRS workers union had met with Obama the day before this targeting began. But I would make the assertion that this new revelation shouldn't change a thing. If Obama didn't know about these major scandals that involved high-level corruption, shame on him. If he did know about them, shame on him. It's not enough to ask the president, what did you know and when did you know it? We should be asking the president, why didn't you know this? That's what the press should be asking. Not what did you know and when did you know it, but why didn't you know? If you knew, shame on you. If you didn't know, shame on you. So I predict over the next year we'll have more and more of these smoking guns. These kinds of scandals involved a lot of people, and there are lots of people who would cover for the president to save the ship. But when it starts to look like the ship is going down and people who covered for their superiors realize that their superiors can no longer promise them cushy future government jobs to close out their working career, the cover-your-own-ass mentality will take over, and the underlings will start throwing their superiors under the bus to save their own ass. And the leadership that came top-down, which led to all this corruption, will boil up bottom-up and eventually take out the leadership. I think we'll see the truth on Fast and Furious. I think we'll see the truth on Benghazi. I think we're going to see the truth on the DOJ spying on the Associated Press. I think we're going to see the truth on the Obamacare shakedown and possibly several more scandals. I mean, this is the failure of leadership. And we've never seen anything like this. And if it wasn't for the accomplice media, the shill press, these things would be so much larger. But I think they are getting larger now. I think they're growing, and I think people are going to take note. So we've got I've got 3 minutes left in my feed here today before my time runs out. So thanks for tuning in. So thanks for tuning into Well Armed Radio. I will talk to you in 1 week. Take care, be safe, be well armed.